would say that's a good synopsis, kind of where we're at. The $500,000 or around $500,000 to put in a sprinkler system is kind of shocking, but kind of not. There is a lot of stuff, the attic, the ceiling space between the attic space, between the ceiling and the roof structure is packed, absolutely packed. So it would, there's not a straight run of, there wouldn't be a straight run of pipe in that sprinkler system. That, I think that's what would drive that cost up. So again, it's $500,000 for a sprinkler system is shocking, but over there is not really surprising. It would be something that would even be difficult to get competitive proposals on, just because every corner there's going to be an unknown. So.
And that's the key word I took away from the last meeting, is there's a lot of unknown.
Yeah.
You're going to have starting figures, and each contractor is going to want to add in, you know, a couple of pages worth of, if this happens,
and this five or so,
didn't expect, you're going to pay extra.
Yeah.
That's true, it was open to the contract.
Yeah, and that'd be on the design side too.
Yeah.
And then there was, you mentioned roof problems. We've got an old roof over there, and it doesn't rain adequately. So to remodel that building, just where you gain nothing from it, if you bring it up to current standards, it's going to cost hundreds of thousands.
I don't know that there's a single piece of that building that would go untouched. If the remodel is done right, I don't care if it's roof, I don't care if it's foundation, sidewalks, life safety issues, plumbing, electrical. I know for a fact there's at least one hot wire up in that attic. I don't know where it came from, but it's on the net. So everything up there, they're not a single, like I said, not a single part of that building that could not be touched in a remodel. You'd like to say that we could keep the walls on the roof. The walls are, on, at least on the north side, that gray aggregate material is attached to plywood or to boards with a mast. And that mast is coming off, so you can see bare wood showing through there. And then you gotta start thinking, okay, so how much water that hits the north side of that building is getting into the building? And you won't know those kind of issues until you start tearing the walls out on the inside. You have a question, sir? I can see it.
No, we started to mess that wall. Mm-hmm. You can take your finger. I go there right now.
You pull it off.
Start doing that, and everywhere in the house, that mortar will come out of there.
Yeah.
It's old. It's dust. It's lime, I guess. I remember that pretty big kid that took my grandma's fireplace out. That was part of the reason. I didn't really ever understand that. The cement got too old.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know too many I got old.
Well, those walls were probably
that's
built.
That's where that building is over there. It's terrible. I mean, I can't imagine, as you said, every ounce of it. I just can't imagine what it costs to fix it. Yeah, there's no, in my mind, and I'm not a builder or a contractor or anything, but in my mind, I just don't see how it wouldn't be cheaper to build another building.
Well, you got a $500,000 right here just in fire suppression. Fire suppression on a new building, you're looking at $250 to $3 a square foot. So $3 a square foot, and one of the questions, I don't know which one of you asked, maybe you asked Dana, about how much would a new building cost. And I've already made some phone calls and had some things to discuss on that. But right now we got about 10,000 square feet of area under roof. Some of that's multiple levels, but 10,000 square feet plus or minus.
Can I get you maybe grab one of those spare mics?
Yeah.
There may be somebody interested in listening to this and they watch it later on.
Okay, so can you hear me? Okay, so we've got about 10,000 square feet over there now. That's under roof. There might be some of that square footage that is multiple levels, as you know, but 10,000 square feet. A lot of that square footage over there is not used, especially on the south side of the building. The old library areas, you know, really a lot of unused space. I'm sure some people go through there. I know some people use it as a walkway to get from the parking lot to their office, but as far as people using that on a day-to-day basis, it's really not used. And then we've got the second floor of the building that nobody goes up to. So we have unused square footage, and we have some square footage in some of those office areas that has some circulation space, but in the whole scheme of things, if you replace 10,000 square foot of usable space with that 10,000 square foot of somewhat unusable space, for instance, we've got that entire area where the vehicle registration used to be.
Which is down just to 10,000, is that going into the block to the other?
No, that's just the area that we're looking at. The annex part and the add-on, the old Guaranty Bank part, 10,000 square foot.
Is that into the upstairs layer as well?
I would say no. I think it's just the footprint of the building. But we do have some areas that are two level.
But it does include the corner, the northeast corner here all the way to the...
It does include the paving and the sidewalk and the parking. That's just the square footage of the area under the roofs.
Yeah.
And I think...
From the judge's office, which is right up there in that front corner, back to the back where you've got the courtroom, the over to the corner of the district clerk, all the way up to the front corner where Judy Cook is to have her...
In general terms, from the east up to adult probation. And going all the way to the north. I'm sorry, all the way to the south is about 10,000 square feet. So, as I say, a lot of that space and that 10,000 square foot is really not used. I don't know what the square footage is, but I also do know that there's some square footage that's used now that is too tight. Like in that southeast courtroom, those corridors, everything, those aren't regulation, if you want to call it courtroom, or spaces, the hallways, the restrooms, all of those things are going to need more square footage in a new building. But if you think 10,000 square foot of replacement space, I think it could all be done right there. You know, it might be two levels, but you could definitely get it all there. I think there would need to be more parking and better access from the back. But if you think 2,000 square feet, Jeffrey, who you guys have met, I just called him since you asked me the question of what does courtroom construction go for. And I think one of the questions, Carl, that where's he, I guess he's at, but the question was, how much does commercial construction go for? Well, this isn't really commercial construction because it has increased security issues, it has audiovisual requirements. Obviously, it's got to be all compliant. But the median cost from the documents that we have is a standard, it's called RS means, a document construction cost for all types of buildings. But you can look in the back of the book and find courtroom costs for construction of new courtrooms. And back in 2015, the median cost was about $210 a square foot. That means that half of the numbers are going to be above it and half of the numbers are below it, is the median cost. So there are other factors that go into it. So you got 10,000 square feet, you apply escalation costs to 2015 numbers, I would think this is gonna be a $250 to $300 square foot building. So to answer the question that Carl had, is this a $10 million building? I think it's less. I think it could be significantly less than that. Especially since you already own the land, you have utilities already there. Basically, it's the design process and construction process. For the sake of this discussion, you know, you might think $5 million and hope that it comes in below that. But for discussion purposes, this early in the process, I would just kind of think about $500,000. I'm sorry. Five million. I wish I could get rid of that one. We got $500,000 for them. I guess I'm still thinking about the fire suppression.
I think we always thought along the lines of $1 million for a light remodel to give us another courtroom over there and to improve the DA's offices and the judge's offices. That was before we really even talked about the needs that were going to be piled on us. AC units, et cetera.
the document, the outline I gave you, I gave you several timelines for different activities. And based on which direction as a group you decide to go to, we could actually build a milestone schedule for that. So that you can get an idea of where your overlaps, like right now, you look at those timelines, like this is a month, that's 3 months, that's 2 months, that's 6 months, or some of those that can be overlapped in scheduling. But at the end of the day, you've got to move the services and demo the building and then start. So those are definitely, that's definitely a time frame, and 18 months is probably a good time frame to think about as to how long that would take to get your services. So it's not only you have to move them, but you have to move them into an area that's up and running so that there's no drop in certain county services, especially for the courts. So that may be a completely separate conversation as to where that might could go to. But I would say an 18-month demo, from demolition to turn over the keys, you might think about 18 months. There could be all the design work. There's something in there about programming that we can talk about. All of that stuff can be done and would be done before anything moved out of there.
Just to make sure, we're talking about starting out of this street and the first street and coming back this way all the way to the building on the corner.
That's debatable. Right now you've got the print shop that the county owns on the west side. You've got adult probation right next to it. Through the programming phase, part of the programming will be a needs assessment. What offices, what spaces, what square footage does the county need? And you may go through the program and say, you know what, we only need 12,000 square feet. So the question at that point would become, okay, do we want to do 12,000 square feet right here? Do we want to do 12,000 square feet in two levels and keep those other two buildings where they are? You know, my first thought would be, okay, is there a way we can determine our needs and fit it on the footprint of the annex building that you currently have and possibly leave those other two services and two buildings as they currently are? That's an option.
You know, those two are a lot older than that.
But they haven't been chopped up and turned over as much.
But I myself think we need to make a parking over there. If we have to go up two levels to get that parking, I think we need to address that while we're, you know, if we're going in this location.
And that would be part of the programming. How much parking do you need? How many people are working there every day? What's the typical number of people that are involved in the court on a particular day? How many people do you expect in the gallery? Things like that. The needs assessment is what, during the programming, will tell you. It'll come to a really clean and straightforward conclusion that we need this many parking places, we need this many square feet, we need this many courtrooms, this many offices, all of those things.
You know, I guess I was thinking more in terms of if you really committed to that property over there, I'm thinking you bulldoze the entire block, which you can buy out a couple of others back here in the back corner and tear down your existing building. We're going to make a modern building there that's going to serve for the next 100 years. You don't need any of that stuff that's over there now.
Anytime you try to build around components that are already there, and the components I've been talking about now are the adult probation and the building on the corner, you're always going to have certain constraints. If you were to do that, you would be limiting yourself to access on the north, the east, and the south side of the building. And that's going to be potentially secured access. You've already got a hallway that connects the annex to the adult probation. The adult probation is already dealing with some restroom issues, going to get drug testing in some of the same areas that you've got the staff using. There's already some cross assemblies in there that you typically try to like to avoid. But anytime you try to do design and construction around an existing building, that existing building is going to always be there and potentially be a constraint throughout the whole process.
Hopefully, we'll be considered people of the village.
Okay.
My opinion, that we are foolish there, I wouldn't think about keeping them, I'm just like, I'm just.
Well, in that case, you would need to allow and add the square footage of the, I'm just using a 10,000 square foot number. Obviously, adult probation is full of offices, so you need to add that square footage and the other square footage to the overall project, and then you can just do global budgeting for that.
Now, one time, from the hall of the annex, all the way to the street there and in the back, since I threw 7,000 feet.
Yeah, I don't know.
I looked for a road, I wondered, and I can't find it, but I don't know why.
I would like to say that we got very precise on our square footage, but our square footage came off of Google Earth. We didn't measure every room in that building.
Yeah.
And that's what we do in a lot of our buildings like this when we first get involved with it. I mean, it's a real good, got a real good mapping tool.
Got that property, that can give us some parking place.
Yeah, sure.
Modern building, I'd say two short or three.
Well, one of the good things that I like about your standard county seat, and Titus County, no exception, have parking all the way around it. It's pretty nice.
Now, another one of the options we'll talk about is, find another location, build new there, leave your current operations in place until moving day. How important is it to be right there where the annex is versus somewhere else? I mean, you've had other counties build quite a ways from downtown. Is that Cass County that has a big metal building called the Justice Center? Maybe that's one of them. That's a possibility too. Finding a location would be a biggest challenge. You could forego having that 18-month dislocation of those offices, which is going to be a big deal. I very much like that location, but I do dread that relocation for the clerk's office. That would be one big disruption, having to duplicate a couple, if not three, courtrooms during that time.
You know, one of the things that I can see making that difficult, and I'm just shooting from the hip here, but I don't know what all the requirements for that space would be. You need a courtroom, you need offices for your judges that would be nice to be secure.
We need three courtrooms?
No, not for a temporary. I mean, you might survive with one courtroom during that. It would be tough, but during that 18 months, that courtroom was just used for jury selection.
You know, one of the things that schools do all the time, and I almost hate to throw this term out there, is portable buildings. You can make a large portable building as a courtroom, have another portable building that's somewhat secure that's connected to it for your judges, chambers, and offices. You know, those are conditioned, they're portable. You can go into it knowing what the rent is going to be on those. When you're done with them, they kind of get them. All you need is space and chairs and, maybe a glorified card table at the front and some, a public address system.
We have a couple of things upstairs. Room over there. And we do that. We'll be crowded. We'll be crowded before. I've done something crowded. Can you do the watching?
Well, there's probably also people in that adult probation area upstairs. You move across the street, I'm just guessing that there's somebody in those spaces now.
Upstairs, there's a lot of that office that we don't use.
Okay. The good thing, though, is that as a Board of County Commission, you have time to think about the next steps. It's not like you've got to jump and do stuff other than the life saving. You've got time to, okay, does it make sense to relocate? Maybe there's some due diligence that's required. Okay, how much would the land cost? One of the things I would definitely warn you on, because I'm dealing with a project right like this in North Dakota right now, is that they've got land at a very reasonable cost. But just because it's pretty or very low cost land, be careful of that because of utilities, soils, all those kind of things. So you've got time to do due diligence to see if it makes sense to rebuild there or to go someplace else. And then also do the due diligence, okay, if we do build here, how are we going to make those services continue? So it's like this can be a very well thought out process. And this is the first time we've ever talked about this as a group, as far as I know. But as long as you can make the pieces fit together, it really can work pretty smooth.
Moved it from downtown, so I prefer to keep it here at all. complete outfit. I like where it's at.
What if you left everything in those buildings, use this parking lot over here for bell tires, and build a building there, and then tear this down, and you could be in a pretty parking lot over on this side. And it's just about to flip flop those two properties. Might crowd the Justice Center over there. Might incorporate in and build a project.
One of the things I would caution about that, if you've got parking over here versus developing this lot with parking around it, you're gonna have pedestrians crossing 271 and constantly.
Crossing 271.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jefferson. But if they're going over there and parking here.
Crossing Madison.
Yeah, Madison.
But I'm still sitting here thinking about what you just said about that lot over there. You got a lot here, you got a lot there, do you?
I can see a cool building right behind that bell tower, you know, built from the corner out.
The bell tower.
Would you build in between the two current buildings, or you knows everything is over there?
That's another thing, I don't like, I just try not to displace a lot of people. Maybe you build a building and move people into there, and then tear those buildings down, parking lot.
You might can get a lot of portable buildings over there on the parking lot, around over there. Kill a lot of parking, but you might can get 10,000 square feet of those, or 50,000, whatever you need.
And that lot over there, if I can just see them, the car corner.
The Justice Center, yeah, that's what.
They there for the Justice Center, we don't have, except that those.
Mark was the little. At least we own the block.
Anybody not like the idea of trying to keep it here for any reason? That would say that's your first choice, you have to go.
That's pretty much it.
New construction, floor building, some or all, keeping it there. If you had that entire block to work with, would you try to maybe centralize something on the block and have a parking all the way around?
I think so. One of the things I think that you would have the opportunity to do, if you had the whole block basically, is put a multiple level building in the middle of it, have parking on the side, and have something other than concrete parking bumpers. Right against the building, that's one thing that makes this courthouse look nice, is the area around it. You know, you don't want to try to build a building that you are going to have to provide parking on a post stand, because then you've got building and street. So this would give you the opportunity to have a little bit of an offset, a buffer off of the main traffic going back and forth, and still have parking.
Are you talking about Greenville, or like?
No, I'm just talking about just.
Parking lot like we have here.
Yeah, with some sort of landscape or something between the building and the parking, not much, but if you did it on too small of a piece of property, you're gonna have parking right up to the face of the building.
Your cost to go up astronomically with, say, a three-story versus a two versus a one?
I would probably look at a two-story at most, I wouldn't try to go three on this. You save some on the skin cost, but then your cost for everything else goes up.
Get an efficiently designed building, efficient halls, efficient.
And again, that would come through the program. It would be good if there was a decision made that, yes, we are going to build this entire block, so that during the programming phase, you kind of know the the boundaries of your project that you're trying, and your problems that you're trying to solve. If you go in a program and you say, you know what, we think we might have the entire block, or we might just have the location of these three, and we might try to save the two. Even in programming, that starts putting constraints on your ability to make decisions. But to answer your question, I would probably look at the two stories and probably no more than that. Something we have done, and I'm always thinking about the future. Back in 1991, one of the first jobs I had out of school was building a bed tower at Children's Hospital in Dallas. The hospital, the bed tower is already there. My assignment was to design floors on top of the bed tower that was already there. And the bed tower that was there in 1990 was designed for those additional floors. They just added the additional floors about 5 years ago. But it's stuff that we designed back in 1990. So if we just did two, thinking about where the county might go, you can easily build in structure for the future. Something you might think about.
Well, the manual will guide our discussion. It sounds like that's kind of a common opinion now. That's still a good location. And it sounds like everybody would be in favor of scrapping the idea of the remodel or going to some kind of new structure. Let me ask you all about time frame. You know, it's never too early to begin the planning process. Would you envision this being something that you would move forward with quickly, or something that you would maybe study and design with the target of beginning 5 years from now?
Some of the time frames, I had several months on there for the programming phase, and that's a series of several workshops where you're rolling up your sleeves and you're doing needs assessments, you're having the opportunity, or maybe not you, but whoever's doing the programming is interviewing the different user groups to define what they need out of a space like that. And bouncing things off of you and letting you prioritize different options. The programming phase is very important, but it's really interesting to watch that develop. The project through programming almost defines itself as far as the square footage is. And I would recommend all of you to be a part of it, as well as maybe someone like, I don't know, Tim Ingram, the main users of the facility that are going to be in and out there, his people. I don't know if he's a guy or something, you know, someone from the sheriff, and maybe it's one or two of the judges that go in there on a basis. And they don't have to be involved throughout the process, but their input needs to be heard. But the programming could easily take 3 or 4 months. I actually brought an example of a program document I'll let you look at. But then after the programming, you define the project, the design of the project, because it is a public project, would have to be sent out an RFQ, request for qualification for different design teams, attorney design proposals for this, and it's not a proposal. You don't select design teams on price. That's the reason why it's request for qualification. You select them based on what they do and what their abilities are.
That's
so
the process we went through when we were selecting a contract manager, it ended up being
We
had a committee that consisted of, Judge Russell and Jerry Lothner and Daryl Rubs, that interviewed these companies and made that choice based on qualification, primarily on the pricing, secondarily.
Yeah. That's right.
The project, and you can give them the time to bid out the project in addition to coming up with the drawings and all that
sure.
stuff. So, let's say you started now, first of September, so you're looking at not beginning the demo process until, say, the first of 2021, and then you can just bid 2022 before it was completed. So,
these projects do have a 3 years, large lead time up to them. We've got projects that we're working on that we've been working with either county commissioners or county fair board or stuff like that. We just opened up one in Cheyenne. We started working with them 6 years ago, and they just opened the building this last week. So there's that could go through an election, and this might have to go through an election. I don't know, but it is a process.
But the budgetary decisions we're making right now, based on the information Carl gave you, are important for this project. What you do today might hamstring you on projects like this if you're not thinking about this.
The good thing about that is that compared to a full construction project, the first few steps aren't huge dollars like the construction, like for instance the programming. There are costs associated with that. That's not a $200,000 item. That's going to be significantly less than that. But the items that you could actually get some progress towards a potential project you could be doing now, and the numbers you have to allocate to a budget aren't huge numbers like construction project, less than a cost of a dump truck.
Small amount of money probably would be buying that property.
Yeah, checking on the buildings over there.
Yeah.
Requires them to change the plan. We
can do that now, short of that. So we can always make a part of it.
And the thing about it is, if they'd be willing, they could go ahead and rent it back from you. They'd have cash in hand, rent it for the next year, give them time to plan. They got money in their hand to relocate or do whatever they want. So it's not like it's not like they have to be relocated right now.
Option 3.
it's out like option three. And then, of course, the first step is addressing immediate life safety concerns. Doug, we already talked about that. Process, and these are just shooting from the hip, the things that we've already discussed as well, site selection, funding and purchase of the site, and funding and purchasing that site may include buildings that are already there, if the entire block, what we're talking about, would be the site we're trying to consider. Then issuing an RFQ where you send out requests for qualifications for the programming phase. And through that programming phase, you would come up with conceptual design and conceptual budgets. So that way, things like budget considerations going forward, you know that, but you know how big the building needs to be. You know what that building needs to be able to do through the programming. Like I said, through the programming, the project kind of defines itself through the assessment. And then I think there should also be a budgeting component to that programming, so you know what you're dealing with. You know that it's going to be a 12,000 square foot building, it's going to cost $6 million. And that arms you with information you need so you can start setting budgets for the next 2 or 3 years. Okay, so after that, obviously there's always got to be project funding. Is this going to be paid for out of existing funds? Is this going to have to be a bonded financially project, or where's the money coming from? Part of that funding will include the design services. On a courtroom building like this, you're looking at 7 to 8%. It's a fairly complex building. And typically, you send out an RFQ, request for qualifications, like you mentioned earlier, whenever you're looking for construction manager on a building, even for architectural and engineering design services.
Describe in item two there, what kind of company would you be interviewing for programming conceptual plans for a typical architect?
A lot of times, it'll be led by an architectural firm, but there are some firms that do nothing but master plan. But I would expect architectural firms to respond to that.
And not necessarily the same one that continues with you there in item number four?
The person or the firm that you selected in item two for programming more than likely is going to be interested and would also respond to our RFP for design. If you didn't like them in the planning and the programming process, then that gives you the outcome. I'm going to use them. Because where we selected that day, you're going to be working with them for the next 18 months and then some. So if you don't like them in the planning process, that gives you an opportunity to go a different direction. I think I don't know what your Roman numeral four says.
Yeah, we've got two numbers for you.
Okay, so I did a cut and paste there. This was Friday afternoon. That should just be design services. That's going to be architectural and all the engineering disciplines that come after the RFP design or RFP for design services. So when you get the building design, the design is going to be a function of your program, right? So then you've got design documents, bid documents. You can either do a hard bid project or you do a construction manager at risk. Construction manager at risk, I think, is a good scenario, and that's what we typically use. Allows you to select the firm, construction firm, that you feel is the best fit for this project. We typically select construction managers based on qualifications. We'll ask them a question about your personnel, your work history, check the references. We have an interview process, and we have a group like this that everyone is grading these interviews. Just like you would be, if I was a contractor, you'd be grading the responses. And then at the end of the responses, and after everyone's been graded, what we've done in the past is they turn in a job cost form. And that form, after all the other qualifications are graded, would include things like what their monthly cost would be and what they want to make, what their fee to manage that project would be. And that's graded as well. Just because they're the cheapest one in the room doesn't mean that they're best. in the past, we grade them one for the price, like a low price, obviously. But then you look at value. Do you feel like they know the scope of work based on their interview? And do you feel like what you're paying them brings good value for the county? So we grade them, we grade their fee in other ways, other than just low price. A lot of times low price is the one in this stuff. And I don't think the county wants to be in a scenario where you're having to police a general contract for the next 18 months across any of this stuff. So it would be great to think as well. So that gets through the RFQ for construction services and then obviously implement the design. And that's, in other words, construction.
What role would maybe you and Creeper Complex Designs play as a customer?
We don't have to play any role. I will say that we have done this and part of the process in lots of locations. We're involved in probably four projects across the country just like this. Different type projects with the same scenario.
And what role do you play there? Is it an advisory role or?
Well, it kind of morphs. There's one project that we've been involved with since probably 2014. And we did several programming projects. And keep in mind, it's a little bit different scenario. That's all private money. This is public money. We did interview for the project. We were awarded the project. And I've been working with them, doing things just like this, walking them through the process. They asked us to hire the design team. So in that case, we were guiding the project. We hired the architect, hired all the engineering firms. We did the programming, we did building layout with the architect, we do all the structural engineering and stuff like that. I'm not here trying to sell our services, we're plenty busy, but we can do as much or none of it, you know, depends on what you guys wanted to do. What I can see in a situation like this is that if there was, through the planning stage or programming stage, we probably wouldn't be involved in any of it unless you guys just want to ask us some questions about what do you think about this. We'd be more than happy to help. But as far as programming is concerned, a courtroom or courthouse is not our cup of tea. We do a lot of heavy commercial. We do lots of fair projects, county projects. We work for lots of county commissioners and fair boards, but we don't build courthouses or don't design courthouses. There's other people, but then when it came to structural work and stuff like that, then obviously we'd be interested in that.
Does that mean you get an architectural firm that's got courthouse experience and security experience?
Yes, I would look for someone that's got this kind of a track record.
Tom Sandler, those school conventions, got new conventions, and they have current stuff they've been building both counties.
The programming part of this, as I said earlier, is very important. I think it's something that if you got engaged with, it'd almost be fascinating the way this thing designs itself, if it's done right. It does take a good amount of time, you know, on the commissioner's part. It's not going to be a 20-hour a week drudgery. It might be a 2-hour meeting every 3 weeks is about what your time commitment would be. So you need to feed all kind of information, watch stuff fall out, then the programming team would go away, decipher all that information, bring it back, and it's really a pretty neat process.
So the first thing, if we were to put something on an agenda, I guess the first decision would be to move forward with a project that would include demolition of some or all of the current annex facilities.
just the building part, when I say building, just say temporary building part, is almost a project, and a logistical project just by itself. You know, I can see maybe one or two of you doing nothing, but that's like, it's almost like you gotta divide and conquer little parts and pieces of this. Maybe Applewhite does portable buildings, and he's got three when it's all done. But, you know, if everybody's in charge of it, then it's kinda like, everybody's always wondering who's doing what, but it's almost like different components of this project needs to have one person that is arranging for it. And the relocation of services, in my mind, is one thing that someone's working on, that's their little deal. They're involved in the programming phase, but they're also working on that. Finding the buildings, setting up temporary utilities, you know, sewer service.
I honestly see having a professional lead that process as opposed to us. We don't have any training there.
Well, maybe not. That person may not have to do it, but have a direct contact with different parts of this. For instance, when your programming team comes, you know, maybe they talk to Mr. Riddle, and that's their contact, and he's the one that's arranging, you know, with everybody else. It's kind of divide and conquer.
Sir, we bring the idea up, then maybe these departments can start figuring, I'm gonna need this much space. I can get by with this for 18 months, and I need two offices. Maybe another person might say, I'll just work out of my car and leave the office up here. Once you come and go, or if y'all need us. Maybe we can condense to survive for 18 months or so. So, yeah.
Those discussions with those department heads, I see occurring during that programming, conceptual plans, and budgeting. We'll be talking to them about what are your needs in a new building, and what are your needs during relocation.
And that shouldn't be something that you guys have to do. That should be something the programming team does. They'll go to those people, possibly get names from you guys, but go to those people and they'll do the interviews and, you know, give you the opportunity to sit in or not, but that's what they do, is do all the interviews. You don't have to be a part of that process. You know, I just thought about something as far as temporary facilities. You even have the space over here, the way I understand it's vacant space, north of Laura's on the corner right there. I know there seem like there's open space in that building. I'm just trying to think of square footage that, you know, you can move into and do a, maybe temporary in a demising wall, but so it's more enclosed and conditioned. I don't, you know, have some security there. Showing you what they have come up with, they get the opportunity to ask questions. Why do we have that room there? What's that room supposed to do? During the construction phase, you have a construction manager report that could actually happen at the beginning of every stop call meeting. You know, the construction manager is going to go, okay, we're doing this. These are some of the problems that we've had. These are our pay estimates. You guys are going to look at the pay estimates and things like that, get a chance to ask him questions about particular items and looks out of line to you. But there would be people doing all of this work and providing you with information and insight on a standard basis. But as far as having to roll up your sleeves for the next 3 months. Yeah, you would be informed, but you wouldn't have to be involved in it on an everyday basis, would be my hope.
I'm just thinking right now with that computer room over there across the street, it's the main nerve center for our network and our telephone system. I don't even know where that would end up. What else should we discuss today, Glenn?
You know, it's difficult building projects, and it's easy to kick the can down the road and let the next group 15 years have the same discussion. So, if you have the opportunity to do it, to do it right, it never gets any easier than today. It's always easy to get down the road and let it be someone else's challenge. But I've always found that if you start planning, it never gets any easier than that. You know, money's never going to get any cheaper than it is right now. Everything goes up.
My grandpa always said, if you wait to get everything just right before you go to St. Louis, you will never go to St. Louis.
And you're still in my place?
St. Louis, I don't know.
Well, the plus is that we've got a lot of projects built up. You got a location. You know, you got a location. You've got favorable financial environment. We've got relief from the payoff of some bonds. We've got relief from construction funds left over, and we've got some coming reduction in annual tax rate devoted to debt service. Those are two big items that
we're going to put it on the agenda for the next meeting to do. Start.
I'm not going to make one. Let's start. See about buying that property.
Site selection, we got that. Funding and purchasing. So some of the properties over there.
Well, this workshop, I don't think any action.
No, but for a future meeting.
It's not a drudgery. We just finished one in Cheyenne. We started working with two guys there 7 years ago. It went through one election. That had to be elected. It was a $21 million job. That failed. They came back and retooled it. We got it to a decrease the scope, got it to a $10 million project. And past the election, they called us from Cheyenne and said, we want you to design this project. I said, okay, so we'll find an architect, we'll go work with them. I said, no, we want you to hire them. So we hired an architect from Cheyenne and mechanical, electrical, civil from Cheyenne, and we already knew what the project looked like through programming. And it's been a, and then they want us to hire the contractor. So we sent out RFQs for contractors and had myself and six other people on it, hired that guy. And it has been a great project. Hired the right contractor. I felt like we had the right team, we had the right relationship, and it went really well. Smooth. It's not that difficult.